Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we'll be looking at news up to the 4th of October. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, head of research, policy and standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story, Kate, asks, what must leaders learn from the Thomas Cook collapse? By Sunday the 29th of September, Operation Matterhorn, the largest ever repatriation of UK citizens in peacetime, had brought back 93,000 people from a variety of tourist hotspots, according to a statement from the Civil Aviation Authority. The Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy Committee announced on 26th of September that it will thoroughly investigate the circumstances behind the company's demise. Committee Chair Rachel Reeve said, amid the frustration of holidaymakers and the misery of thousands of staff losing their jobs, the collapse of Thomas Cook has uncovered what appears to be a sorry tale of corporate greed, raising serious questions about the actions of Thomas Cook's bosses and their stewardship of the business. Kate, what governance lessons must leaders take away from Thomas Cook's collapse?
I think firstly, we have to be saddened at the demise of such an old company, and that one actually was founded by a genuine adventurer, Thomas Cook, who was a Baptist and who really saw travel as a force for good. One of the first trips he arranged being a pilgrimage here in the Midlands. It also makes us think, what goes on in these senior team meetings when they must obviously be congratulating each other for their hard work or their insight, and actually ignoring the evidence that however hard they're working or however well they think they're doing, they are not delivering the results that are needed to sustain an organisation over the long term. And I'd be so interested to see the minutes. And I think what it reminds anybody in these positions is to be accountable for what you're supposed to be doing, not what you think you're doing well. And in this instance, this was to deliver holidays at a profit, well, for people and to keep the business going. And they have failed lamentably in doing that. And nobody was questioning them sufficiently or holding them to account.
Right, thank you very much, Kate. Our next story asks if a Thunberg effect could boost neurodiversity. Greta Thunberg took time to speak about her own identity as a neurodiverse individual on her recent visit to New York, telling CBS This Morning, in some circumstances, it can definitely be an advantage to have some kind of neuroatypical diagnosis, to be neurodiverse, because that makes you different, that makes you think differently. And especially in such a big crisis like climate change, when we need to think outside the box. We need to think outside our current system. We need people who think outside the box and who aren't like everyone else. Exploring a storm of controversy that erupted around negative Fox News coverage of Thunberg's UN appearance, wherein a guest on the channel had described the activist as a mentally ill Swedish child, the Hollywood Reporter spoke to Julia Bascom, executive director of US group the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. History is full of autistic people and people with other cognitive disabilities who were and are compelling, credible activists and leaders, she said. Greta is part of that tradition and our community is lucky to have her. Kate, to what extent could Thunberg's presence on the world stage helped to boost the number of neurodiversity inclusivity programs already in operation? And what should leaders learn from the breakthroughs that Thunberg has achieved as a public figure?
Well, maybe the Thomas Cook could have done with some more diversity in their senior team, somebody stating the obvious, asking the difficult questions, and being unrelenting in their pursuit of the answers. But what is so sad about this, and is so much the experience of so many underrepresented groups, the lengths that people will go to silence them and to make their viewpoint less valid, less important than the much more typical groups. So good, she has put difference on the world stage, and we need that difference because that's where you get questions, challenge, and of course, as is so well evidence, innovation.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story looks at team building, which is meant to bring people together. But a Compass newsletter produced by American business magazine Fast Company suggests in an article by Tracy Brewer that team building can often do the opposite. Tracy suggests that team building can fail for many reasons. For example, focusing on the team building element without thinking whether a particular activity is appropriate, not providing an appropriate structure or environment, or perhaps even detracting from employees' work-life experience by taking them away from the time they'd rather be spending with their families or non-work friends. Kate, I'm interested to know your views on team building as a worthwhile activity, and if you have any good examples, or perhaps even not so good examples, that you could share with us.
Well, Tracy has really highlighted the problems with team building that doesn't build teams, because it hasn't been designed to build the team that needs building. If you start with the particular interest, and I think particularly in my own experience of having worked a lot with outdoor management development, if you start from the interests of people who want to, for example, do a lot of abseiling or canoeing, you're going to lose people. You have to design a series of activities and experiences that everybody can join in. There's no hierarchy of participation in that sense, because nothing builds teams like success. And you need to create the situation where teams can succeed and everybody can feel part of that success. So I think too often things are held up as team building, and actually they're not building teams, they're just offering quite nice activities for a percentage of the team in question, which leaves others feeling alienated, not at all part of what's going on, and wishing that they were somewhere else.
Thank you very much, Kate. Now, our final story is one I think you will have a particular interest, because I believe you met Naga Munchetti recently on the BBC Sofa. Now, as you know, there is an ongoing controversy with Naga Munchetti and her views, and I wonder what you would think of this.
Well, I was talking on her sofa, not with her as it happens, but with her fellow male presenter, about the gender pay gap. And I got an overwhelming sense that individual women within the BBC were somehow being blamed for the fact that there was a gender pay gap, because they weren't taking the appropriate action as individuals to redress that balance. So the BBC, or manifested by this particular presenter, wasn't seeing it as an institutional problem. And when somebody like Naga, who's obviously very professional, has been on the programme for a while, very popular with the viewers, is asked for her opinion as a woman of colour, why shouldn't she give it on a show like that? It's not like it's a more serious news programme. It is BBC Breakfast. And so many viewers would want to hear what she had to say. And also many would also identify with her in that view. And it just seems to me that this was a further example of the BBC going some way to get it right, but not wholeheartedly supporting women of colour particularly to succeed and flourish and to be able to be truly authentic in that environment.
Well, thank you, Kate. Is there anything new in the Institute before we finish that you would like to tell us about, Kate?
Oh, there is. We've just launched a new product when we're encouraging leaders and managers everywhere to be recognised for their great management style. When they coach people, we talked last week about how important coaching approaches are for the management needs of today. So go onto our website and find out how you can earn your badge to say, yes, I know how to coach the people I manage.
Thank you very much, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. And while people are working on collecting their digital badge for coaching, listeners can find further topical content in the news and views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.